Hello and welcome. It's Thursday and you're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Tomorrow, we'll be facing the inhuman haunting of Malvern Manor. Josh Hurd is going to join us to reveal the haunting history and chilling paranormal activity that continue to plague an Iowa town in the Malvern Manor. There have been scratches, disembodied voices, and an inhuman presence. And those are just the tip of the supernatural iceberg we'll cover tomorrow. Tonight, we've got two guests joining us from Haunt Me, hosts of the popular series Haunt Me, now in its fourth season. Ty Gowan and Carol Cleveland join us to discuss the haunted histories and mysteries of Maine and share with us some of the stories surrounding their most interesting paranormal investigations and talking about some places you've probably never heard of. Welcome to the show. Thank you guys both for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having us. This is going to be a blast.
Yeah.
Let's do this real quickly, and just to give background for everybody. And Ty, I'm going to admit something up front to you that I owe you an apology.
Okay.
For years on Facebook, I have turned a blind eye to you. I have ignored you, and here's the reason why. My friend Jason Gowan has a dog named Ty. And when I saw Ty Gowan, I thought he was just putting up his goofy-ass dog's Facebook page, and I didn't accept, I didn't follow, I didn't look into it, and now I feel bad knowing that you're not a Chihuahua. You are, in fact, an investigator, and now I feel really bad for all these years of just thinking that that my friend just posted nothing but a silly dog Facebook page. But now that I know Ty Gowan the dog as well, I kind of wish he did have his own page. But
you literally just gave Carol so much ammunition to use against me for the rest of my life.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
I always felt bad when I saw this and I started digging into the email. I'm like, oh, yeah, the Haunt Me people. There is a Ty Gowan. Interesting.
Every time I see him, I'm going to bark.
Yes. No. Well, you should. And now there are four of you that are the central focus of this show, and everybody kind of plays its part. Why don't we start off, since you're the one that can explain it the best and pronounce the big words that I think you may have made up on this, Ty. Why don't you introduce me to yourself and your position and the incredible title that you've given Carol Cleveland on the show as well?
Yeah, so the title that we gave Carol is only befitting the queen that she is. But I'm the analyst. So I basically go in and take the evidence that we gather, and I'm able to try to fit it into a format palatable for our viewers. And even though that's kind of my role, and when we started 4 years ago, there were more lines in the sand. As far as our roles are, it feels more like everyone kind of does everything now, but it's definitely my strong suit. Next up is Carol, who is sitting next to me. She's the monosologist, because she has the most amount of experience on the team. She's been hunting the paranormal and investigating all things that go bump in the night longer than anybody else on the team.
Yeah, I'm really into ufology.
So she follows that, as well as you go to a lot of conferences and stuff like that, too. Yep. So she brings an added amount of information to us that otherwise we wouldn't have had. But the really cool aspect of or at least what I think the really cool aspect of our show is Ashley and Katie. Ashley is our team lead and historian, and Katie is our occultist. Where a lot of shows, you know, especially the ones on TV, lean away from anything magical or anything that doesn't make a light blink, Katie kind of leans into that area of things that aren't seen and are harder to kind of like to play across on camera. So when we do a show, our viewers are great and, you know, have really embraced the fact that there's a lot of the stuff that we can't show on a K2 meter, but when Katie's doing a spell, something that I'll try to do is corroborate it with a piece of technology. So, you know, beforehand, nothing's happening. Katie lights up a communications altar and tries to make that work. Then we bust out the equipment again and see that the things that weren't going blink before are now going blink, and we are good to go to start communicating.
Right. Yeah.
I like that you boiled it down to the earliest and most basic essence of things that go blink and things that do not. That makes a show a lot easier to follow.
And I think so too. It makes it more palatable.
I'll tell you, there's so many online shows that have sprung up, and I'm constantly hit with people, oh, we want to be on your show, and I watch it, and I can't get past the first 10 minutes of an episode without thinking, I'm not only not going to watch this, but I will never subject another person to this if I have the ability. And that's not a slam. It's just some people think they've got a great product going, and a lot of times it's just really painful to watch. And, you know, I try to give everybody a fair shot, and I popped on Haunt Me, and I'll tell you, honestly, I think it's a great, great program. You guys should be proud of the work you're doing on it. It's a lot of fun for people that don't have, and, you know, having been behind the scenes of production on Ghost Adventures and Paranormal State and on Paranormal Challenge, I see what goes into creating a show that I think you guys have created visually and aesthetically very solid programming and some great locations. And, of course, I like watching people interact and do things differently than most investigations. And you guys seem to have a really great cohesiveness and individuality at the same time. So I applaud you guys. This is something I was very interested in talking to you about once I got a chance to actually sit down and watch a couple of your episodes.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
We blend together really well. I mean, a lot of the credit goes to the tech crew and our camera ladies, our cameramen, and our producer. They work so hard, and it comes, they capture the moments, and they capture our true selves in a way that, I mean, obviously people are seeing a difference from, you know, us compared to some other shows the way it's done, but it's the way they capture it, and I don't know, they're great.
Well, let's get a little history for people. I want to know a little bit about both of you. And Carol, we'll start with you. Talk to me a little bit about your fascination with the paranormal. What got you involved and interested in ghosts and UFOs?
Well, I've been surrounded by paranormal activity my whole life. And so, I mean, honestly, it's as simple as this. I got into ghost hunting, I guess, to fill some kind of void. I'm looking for answers. I don't know to what questions, but just any type of answer. And the more I did research, the more I realized that I have experience in the ufology. So outside of ghost hunting, I started researching that a lot more in my personal life, and I started to find a connection between the two. So that's when I realized, okay, ghost hunting was filling this void. And now I'm seeing the connection.
Well, you say something at the beginning to say you've always been surrounded by the paranormal.
Right.
Give me some specifics of that. What do you mean?
Just missing time as a child. Things that I saw always seemed to live in a haunted house. It's definitely not every single house or apartment I lived in. It had to have been me.
Yeah, the first episode we ever did of Haunt Me was because we went to Carol's mom's house. And we kind of just sat in the basement for a little bit. And so, like, Carol has definitely been surrounded by paranormal her whole life. If, you know, the first episode we ever did was just like, hey, Carol's mom, can we hang out at your house in the dark for a couple hours?
Yeah, I mean, from seeing spirits, I've seen UFOs since I can remember. So it's...
Well, talk to me about your mom, then. How does your family feel about your fascination with with this type of phenomena?
My dad is becoming a lot more open to it. He won't really talk about it in a conversation comfortably, but he's right on top of Haunt Me, and he watches all our shows. He's really becoming open. My mom is on board 100%. She, you know, remembers a lot of my experiences. She's had some herself, so she's kind of enjoying this journey watching us.
What would you say when it comes to the ghosts prior to this show and videotaping and chronicling it this way? What was one of the most chilling encounters you remember having?
Go chill, Carol. You can do it.
God, that's hard because I feel like I'm gonna, after this ends, I'll be like, oh, I should have told him about that.
Well, you know what? We can always have you back sometime, Carol. So you can tell me other stories another time. But give me one of your favorites at least. Sure.
Okay. Well, since Ty was talking about my mom's house, I'll just give an example. But we first moved in, my sister saw some children in the backyard and saw them again in the house. My mom saw a man in the basement and thought that he was helping move in. She thought he was a friend of my dad's. She can describe even the paint that was on his overalls. But my chilling encounter was I was watching their house for the weekend, and my boyfriend had just brought dinner over, and we were in the kitchen, and I heard my bedroom door creak open in the basement, and it just was too much of a creak to be the cat just going right through. And then right after, as if a big man was coming up the steps, like we heard footsteps down to the boot coming up the steps, and I was supposed to be the only one in there, so both my boyfriend and I ran out. The dog was flipping out. We had a big Newfoundland. The dog was barking at the stairs from the basement. So my boyfriend had a machete. And
holy crap.
What are you, dating dark. Jason Voorhees?
Right. Well, you know, that's...
You were worried about the guy coming
down
the
stairs.
Oh, yeah,
by the way, that's the... No. he went back in the house, checked the whole thing, and nobody was in there. But, I mean, it sounded exactly like somebody opened my bedroom door and started to walk up the stairs. And my bedroom door was at the very bottom of them. And, I mean, all of us started panicking.
So but did that keep you two from going down the neck that night in your bedroom?
Yes, it did.
I would guess. I think the spirits were watching out for your parents' best interest in that case, Carol. We're going to just scare the man out of the house by thumping a couple of doors and stomping up the stairs for you.
He's had some, he's my ex-boyfriend now, but he had some experiences himself, like a lot of weight on his chest, and he thought he was being choked because he couldn't breathe. And we looked at him, and all of his hair was standing up like it was staticky, and...
Oh, wait, so was he sleeping and woke up to this, or?
He was sleeping on the couch. He had fallen asleep. He worked like 24 hours. He was working for the state road crew or whatever, and they had a hurricane, so they were fixing a bunch of roads. And so he had come over to see me, and my parents were like, just take a nap on the couch, and he just, I thought at first that he, you know, had like sleep apnea or something, but there were marks on it, like there was a, not any handprints or scratches, but there was like a redness to his chest area by his collarbone, and all of his hair was just standing on end. All of it, arms, legs, the top of his head, everything.
Very creepy. All right, so that's what started you with the paranormal angle with the ghosts and those kind of moments. Now, as you look back, you mentioned missing time. About what age do you realize that you start having missing time and maybe encountering UFOs or aliens?
I know the aliens were when I was in the crib. The only detail I can give you about that is that I can remember seeing them just standing there. The missing time, God, I would...
Well, did these things ever touch you physically? Did they speak to you?
I'm assuming, the research that I've done, I'm assuming I'm an experiencer, you know what I mean? But I can't, those memories for me, those early ones, I can literally just remember the most fear I've ever felt in my body and seeing them standing there, not moving, just standing. And then the missing time, I was probably, I want to say roughly between 5 and 7. And I was in the parking lot of my mom's apartment, and then I was all of a sudden in the woods, and it had been about a 3 hour. And I had a hard time finding my way out of the woods. Like, and this was in a town that's pretty much a small city. There's not many woods. But, I finally found my way back. And, I mean, when I realized that I was in the woods, it was maybe a 10-minute walk out. But when I got back into the parking lot, my dad was like, you know, where have you been? We've been looking for you. And then I realized it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was just playing in the parking lot. I definitely would not have gone in the woods.
Have you ever considered going in for a regression to try to find out what happened during those times?
I have had – oh, I shouldn't say I've had the opportunity. I've had that offered to me, and I'm probably going to, yes.
Why the hesitation for someone who's seeking the truth on a web series about the paranormal? Why have you hesitated to look into that aspect of your life?
I think there's not so much hesitation now, but this is all in like the last 3 years that I realized this stuff about myself with being an experiencer in ufology. So it was kind of a shock to me once I realized that, you know, my memories started to piece together. It was really hard to take in. So if someone were to ask me to have a regression, which they did, I was kind of freaked out because I was like, what? I was already shocked, like I said, but I was like, I don't know if I can handle remembering if I was taken, what they were doing to me. But as time went on, more knowledge made me feel better, so I think I'd be more apt to do a regression.
Especially knowing you, since we met, and you finally, you know, becoming comfortable enough to confide in me, you know, of what had happened to you, which is totally outside of my ball game. Like, that, I don't even understand anything UFO or anything alien. It all terrifies me. And so for you to finally get the courage to even admit that.
And I'm still telling Ty randomly, like, you know, when we hang out outside of Hami and we're just doing kind of like family stuff, I tell him random bits and pieces, and it's like he's finding out about a new me. Like, I kept that so private. But the more we do this, the more everything connects, and I'm just kind of like, screw it. I need to just be open about it.
I think working with the paranormal in Haunt Me has, in each of us, given us a way to empower us to better find the truth that we're ready to engage with. And some of the stories that you've told me, Carol, are beyond anything that I could personally deal with and sound more like dealing with a past trauma. You know, like, it's not like, you know, walking in and getting scared from a really scary earthly spirit. It's something that I don't have any mindset to understand. And, you know, the aspect of doing a regression, you know, I've even been offered one, and I don't think I've had any experiences. Like, awakening something that, you know, could be buried really far deep down inside of you, that's traumatic.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I'm brave enough to do that. So for you to...
And I already suffer from, like, really bad anxiety. So that's, I think, where the hesitation came from at first. But like I said, more knowledge, more strength.
Yeah, I mean, we're season 4 with Haunt Me. There's things that we've done this year and have already done for season 5 that we're filming that I would have had no ability whatsoever in season 1 to even fathom putting myself into. So, you know, it's a growth that has to come naturally. And so I would never, you know, force a regression before you're ready for anything like that.
Exactly.
Otherwise, I would probably just melt and disappear.
Well, Ty, talk to me about your experiences then. What was the instigating factor for you to start wanting to research and look into the paranormal?
Like, literally, I'm going to apologize to you right now because it is nothing as interesting as Carol's at all. It's a picture that I saw one time for me. I apologize to your listeners as well because this story is not going to get any wows. I was on a field trip when I was in fourth grade, and we went to this preserved colonial city that's in Maine. It's called Willowbrook. And in Willowbrook, they had all kinds of different houses that had been preserved and upkept, and they had different artifacts inside of those. And we got to tour this one called the Doctor's House. And I remember going upstairs with our little tour group, and one of the really only things that I remember there besides, like, the penny candy store is this room. It was the child's toy room. And on the wall, there was this photo where it was of this little girl. And I remember, like, looking at this photo, and I guess, it, you know, along the lines of what Carol said, missing time, I don't think it was like that at all. I think I just got obsessed with this picture as a fourth grader, to the point where what I remember is my friend coming back in the room saying, "What are you still doing here?" Everyone else left. And so I that's when I kind of snapped out of it and realized that everyone, like, my tour group had gone. So the room in the picture gave me this really weird feeling that I remember it was strong enough that it made me, at the end of the tour, ask the tour guide what was up with that picture. What's the problem with this picture of the little girl in the room? It made me feel weird. Because, like, when you're in fourth grade, making weird is, like, the best you can describe,
right?
You know, maybe a sixth sense happening or something like that. And the tour guide said along the lines of, you know, every people ask about this picture every once in a while. It's actually a fascinating story. the original owners of the picture before they donated it to us had a daughter who passed away from, I think she said scarlet fever, in town before anyone had, you know, they had had any photographic evidence that she existed. So they buried their daughter, and then I guess it was 2 weeks later that a traveling painter came through town, and he knocked on their door and asked if he could paint their daughter. And they told him that, you know, he couldn't paint their daughter because they had just buried her 2 weeks earlier. And the man said, "I know, I need to paint her." And so they allowed him to, and he had sat down and apparently painted a perfect likeness of this girl, refused payment, and left town. And that though, it's not like a ghost jumping out at you and scaring you when you're a kid.
But that gripped you.
It gripped me. It started my interest in these stories and this lore and how these ghost stories start. And that's really my start was like, there are more stories out there I need to learn about.
And
them.
Knowing you, I could totally see you at that age being like, whoa, and driven just, from there on out about legends.
Just a bowl cut and glasses that covered my whole face, ready to launch into the darkness.
Well, I'll tell you this. You're a great storyteller because I thought that was a fantastic story. So don't belittle your own inspirations in comparison to Carol, because everybody has that different point that makes them want to jump, and that's a freaky story. Any way you cut it, that is a weird story.
It's definitely a weird one for sure. It pales in comparison to the amount of adventure that Carol's had, but
no,
it was definitely my starting point.
I think it's definitely the same type of intenseness. Like that is you. You love legends. That's what drives you. I love it. And to see where it all came from, it makes so much sense.
Just the field trip. I just wanted candy.
Yeah.
It was a penny a piece. I was so pumped all day.
Oh, my God.
That reminds me of the story, and now the name is going to escape me. It's in New York, and it's this great old mansion that's right there in downtown New York. A famous rich woman lived there. She was having an affair with Andrew Jackson. She had an affair with Aaron Burr, and that's kind of what led to the shooting and that kind of aggression, and just a really fascinating place. But these kids were there on a field trip. I think this was like in the 80s, I want to say, and they were standing in the front yard, and the doors opened on the top floor, and this woman kind of floated out and shushed everybody because they were being too loud. And everybody kind of quieted down, and she went back inside and the door shut. And when the lady showed up to open the door to let them in, they said, "Well, really sorry to have bothered, the caretaker." And she said, "There's no caretaker." And she said, "Well, we were all out here." The woman that's already in the building, and she said, "There's nobody else in this building. I'm the only one here." And it was a whole collection of teachers and students that witnessed this woman come out. So, see, a field trip can turn into something quite terrifying.
Yeah, it's like the haunted house version of the Magic School Bus for me. So,
I love good mass sighting.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Haunt Me, and tell me a little bit about some of your other teammates and what they bring to the story. They're not with us tonight, and perhaps we'll visit with them again in the future. But tell me about your other two teammates, their positions, and anything you want to give us a little background on them.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start off with Ash because she started it all. It was about 5 years ago. Newly graduated from college, we're sitting on her couch, wondering what we can do. You know, we all have these passions, you know, and we want to kind of go on more adventures. I'd taken her for her birthday on a ghost hunt, not filmed or anything like that, because this is pre-Haunt Me. It's actually how I had met Carol, was my first team before Haunt Me.
And actually, this hunt that he took her on her birthday, I met her that night.
So it was a little bit of divine intervention. We went to a place in Massachusetts called the Bridgewater Triangle.
Sure.
And it was a great time. You know, it was huge. It was the first time I'd done anything outside. There are so many different claims and so many different experiences for us to inject ourselves into. I think, honestly, it rocked Ash's world a little bit because she looked kind of pale at the end of it. But where it came out was that she was like, you know, she'd been having experiences her whole life too. And she was like, if other people are having these experiences, those are some stories that need to be told. So we kind of were sitting around and had this idea where she knew a girl named Katie. And she knew that I knew Carol, who had a lot of experience. Our friend Nick Nordfors had just gotten out of film school from NYU, and she was like, you know, Maine is full of lore, Maine is full of all these legends. Let's stay in the state because no TV shows are coming here to feature these lesser-known haunts. Let's go out, find people who have stories to share, find the spirits that are resolving around the stories, and let's make that our show. And so the first season was a lot of us, like, digging in and, you know, a lot of hard work from Ash trying to find, you know, different stories. And then from then on out, it's been people reaching out to us to send us around, which, you know, is a lot less work when you don't have to mind the haunts yourself, but when they come to you. But, you know, it's definitely – it speaks to the amount of passion and love that Ash kind of, like – stuck into this and really drove it into the show to get us all inspired around her and like lead us into the show. Since then, she's kind of become more like the folklorist. She loves finding the stories behind these places and digging deeper and doing research, because as we kind of grew, we all became later leaders of our own, I guess, expertise.
Right.
So where she, you know, it's no longer Ash sending us into solitary. We kind of just know what needs to be done. So she kind of moved into, you know, another piece of things that fascinated her. But then we have Katie Webb, who has been researching the occult and is a practicing pagan witch, and really brings a unique and cool aspect to the team.
Yeah.
She brings magic of all forms and definitely moves into a haunt with the idea that, you know, to help whatever's there or help whoever, I know, on our side has to be there. And so we've gone into, like, hazardous places that she's put up protection spells. We've gone into places where we need to get something done for the homeowners. So she's able to throw out communication altars. She's gone to bat with cursed objects this past season. And it's really cool when we're dealing with something that you can't see and something that we don't understand, when she's able to draw on tarot cards to paint more of a picture for something that we would have been just, you know, lost in the dark about, especially if your K2 meter or your audio recorder isn't getting any hits. You're basically sitting in the dark with a ghost who refuses to speak with you. But if Katie can give that ghost a tarot card reading, you kind of learn more about that spirit, whether or not they actually wanted to divulge that information. And so it's a good jumping off point. We found that it's a great opportunity to get to know a spirit and talk to them on their own level too. So that's kind
how do you give a tarot card reading to the undead? Or I shouldn't say the undead, but the dead. It seems like you don't get a response. It's not like they're, oh yes, I did lose a key there. You know, I mean, how do you get that information that you're on to something?
So it's fascinating that you asked that, and I'm going to try to explain it the best way that Katie could, and how she's explained it to me as well. So normally you're in a tarot card reading, and, you know, you flip a card, and like you said, you know, oh, I did just get out of an affair. You know, she doesn't want that information anyway from the living, because it skews the rest of her reading. She has enough confidence in her skills that her scrying and her divination is going to come through in the cards, regardless of whether or not she has the positive reinforcement from her clients. So she kind of says that she translates that over into ghost hunting, where they can't verbally affirm back to us whether or not she's right. What I can do is, after she started that conversation, that can steer the rest of our investigation. So if she flips three cards and lets us know it's a woman who fell out of love and is looking for forgiveness, we can then ask questions to the air, specifically, you know, designated towards females looking for retribution, females looking for solace.
That's well said. Yeah.
The girls can then, you know, speak with her about her worth, and we can have that talks. And we found that when you're relating to a spirit based on something that they understand and they they have empathy towards, based on Katie's reading, you get more of a response because you're meeting them at their own level, instead of demanding response from them, demanding them to talk to you where they don't know who you are either. So it kind of levels the playing field a little bit, and we found that it actually helps a great deal to start conversations. And then our tools, like our audio recorders, any of the blinking lights that we talked about earlier, can then further that response further than a tarot card ever could.
All right. Well, I'm curious, when you put her to work doing that, when you're not getting any kind of connection, and then she opens the communication, does she ever leave the room to let you guys continue the conversation? And the only reason I ask that is I'm more wondering if she works like a transistor and the information starts coming through her or around her because she's the one that opened that conduit to begin with. Do you follow where I'm going with that?
Yeah, absolutely, and I would say that you're right on track. There's a moments where I've actually asked her if she can even see the cards, if that makes sense, because we're in a dark room and she's flipping these cards and something, you know, she'll start getting into a groove and she'll start telling this really accurate story. The K2s will start to blip, the REM pods will go off in the room as she's furthering this story, and you're realizing that, you know, the cards are what she's saying, but she is tapped into something even further.
And sometimes when she sets, like he said, there'll be nothing going on, she'll set up an altar, and in that case, sometimes we all disperse, and things will start happening.
Yeah.
It's been random, but it's definitely been some times where after Katie has lit some kind of altar to boost communication.
And it's really interesting, too, because you have to know enough. Again, working as a team, you have to know enough about the history that Ash is able to bring with us when we go into a place to know if that is an appropriate response to do.
Right.
Like we tried, Katie tried to put up a protection spell in a place that we were told has a dark entity, but we were also in a seminary school, so deeply religious locations. Yeah.
I was with her. We walked back, and the candle that she had lit was sitting in a very tiny glass holder, very tiny, but it had a pentagram on it. And when we came back, that glass was split in half.
It was shattered. I was two floors up, and I heard the poof of it. And so something had come along, extinguished the candle, and smashed the pentagram right down the center of it.
I mean, right down the center.
And so it was just like, you know, did that just happen? Is that a coincidence? Or does the fact line up that, you know, we are in a school that would, you know, think that that's devilry through and through, and Katie made the misstep of trying magic there, and that was not a night that we should have done magic.
Right.
It's those types of things that to take into account. That, you know, even if she is, you know, a transistor and she's able to pull all that stuff through, you can't always depend on it, just like you can't always depend on a K2 meter.
There are countless online ghost hunt shows, plus all the ones that are on TV. What made you and your group decide, you know what, we need to document this as a web series, and we're going to bring this to it that's completely different than what's out there? To walk me through that aspect of your show.
Sure. I think it started as an ability to find the means to do it. You know, like, we're in Maine, so there's not a huge presence for us to, you know, pitch our ideas to any networks that'll listen to us, because we're as far away from that as possible. So it was kind of like this thing where, you know, I loved Ghost Hunters, you know, when I was in college, but
I don't know if we thought we would get so well known and get so many fans. We were just doing it because this was a genuine interest. And I think people can really feel when they're watching us that we are being genuine and, we've got morals, and we want to do this the right way. We like to web out with other people, share information, and like I said earlier about blending, each one of us brings something to the table, and it just works. We don't know, but we definitely cherish it.
And it's that just works factor that kind of made us, after starting the web series because we could and because we wanted to do something our own way, the blending factor and knowing how well we work together is why we stayed that way. We've had opportunities to pull in other people to help make the show.
Mm-hmm.
In that aspect, they, you know, have kind of wanted to change it. Mm-hmm. in different ways, and it never felt right. And so with this show, it's evolved hugely since season one, but it's always evolved in the way that we felt comfortable and the way that we wanted to take it.
Right.
And so that's why we've stayed on the web, and that's why we've stayed true to our home state, because in 4 years, you know, year one, we wanted to go out and document some of the coolest things that, you know, people outside of Maine have never even heard of.
Well, let's do that. Let's take a break. When we come back, talk to me about some of these places that nobody's ever heard of, and some of the back histories and haunted tales that surround them. That'll be fascinating, especially because we have seen so many different locations featured on TV shows, radio shows, books, and it's always great to hear about a few new gems that pop up.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. We are talking with two of the hosts of the television web series Haunt Me. And we've got with us Carol Cleveland. We also have Ty Gowan joining us. And we're just discussing some of their background in the paranormal. What drew them to this? What was their interest? And more importantly, what sets their show apart? Now, you guys focus strictly on hauntings in Maine. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Do you ever go outside of that realm? Do you ever check into nearby cities, towns, and states?
It's neat that you say that, because we'll hint on it. Season 5, we're filming right now because season 4 just ended, and we're crazy. We're not giving ourselves a break. We actually have the first ever road trip planned. So something happened in season 5 that dictated the fact that we should be leaving the state for the first time ever. So we're going to do a little Haunt Me road trip for one of the episodes.
Well, Maine's not a huge state. Was that what predicated it, the fact that you'd run out of places that are haunted in your state?
No. Surprisingly, oh. Maine is really huge. The ability to get throughout all of it is a limiting factor. If driving straight up north takes about 7 hours before you hit Canada. And the populated area, a more populated area, is down south. But we have it's incredible. The more we find for places to visit, the weirder the locations come through the cracks to seep into our purview.
Right.
It's really interesting because we'll be like, you know, oh, this is the craziest place that I've ever seen. It's in Rumford, Maine. And then, you know, you'll get two people that'll be like, oh, if you think that's crazy, check out this. And it's like, yeah. Sure. So that's the evolution of our show so far is...
I'll be honest. I thought... I used to make jokes all the time. We're going to run out of places. But that's not true at all. We've actually had to pick and choose, or we keep coming up with places, definitely. Just like he said, too.
And I think the fascinating thing about it is because we've got Maine pride and, you know, we've decided to stay and keep the show focused on our state, it's forced us to look deeper. Whereas, you know, you're traveling around the U.S., you're going to do Waverly, you're going to do Pennhurst, you're going to do Eastern State, you know, the places that are on the radar. And since we're staying in this state and we're looking for locations, it's forced us to dig. It's forced us to look harder and go to places that maybe don't have the best story or legend attached to them, but then the coolest thing in the world will happen. Like, an example of that is one of the places that we went to, and we've gone back several times, we almost didn't go to at all because a person who is now a friend of ours reached out to us about investigating a community center.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no sex appeal to that at all. You know, it's not like a demonic church.
Right.
It's not like a tuberculosis sanatorium that's falling down and is riddled with spirits. It's a place that people in the town tend to go and play basketball. You know,
it's been one of our most active places. I mean, it blew our mind the first time. We thought, oh, it can't get any better. And then
we had to go back
exactly.
For season 5, which will be one of our earlier episodes.
I can't give too much away, but it gets better and better every time.
I will say that it is the most active place I've ever been in my life, to the point where there's this the moment that is on our interviews where we're talking about our night so far to the camera. And our producer was getting frustrated, and we actually had to do a quick like live EVP session to ask the spirits to quiet down and calm down long enough to stop banging and thumping so that we could finish a clean interview.
Yeah.
It was incredible, man. Like, it was so cool. And then, like, we finished the interview as fast as we could and just dove back into the night.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait a minute. You didn't just end the interview to start chasing down whatever was causing this?
It's so funny that you say that, because normally I would. But by this time of the night, it'd been 4 hours into it. And we were so overrun with the best stuff happening that it had become constant. Commonplace. And we were just kind of like...
It was constant.
Yeah, it's like, it's chill.
It's
like,
either we end it now or we just spend the night.
And, wait for it to be quiet so we can get this necessary interview out and we'll be there until dawn.
Right.
It was crazy. It's when paranormal things become commonplace isn't something that most people ever complain about.
Let me
ask real quick before you go on with that. You know, we just had Blake Smith on our show from Monster Watch, who is a very big skeptic and does a podcast for Skeptic channel, and David McAfee. Both of them are very open. They're skeptics, but they haven't really had experiences like that that they would say, even though they both kind of admit that there's some weird stuff that's gone on in their world, they're not comfortable saying that they feel that they've encountered something paranormal. Would you ever be willing to accept one of these guys into the fold for an episode so that they could experience a place that's that active?
Those guys are my favorite guys.
Yeah.
Hands down, I consider myself an open skeptic too, but maybe I'll take it back a few notches because I have had those experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go into a place, I always make sure that I have that skepticism of no matter what the legend or lore is.
Yeah, it's healthy too.
I try to go into a place with, you know, base zero. Nothing's going to happen tonight. But I always make sure that I'm prepared because I know stuff can. So I think that's just, you know, a degree away from these guys. But bringing people like that along are my favorite things in the world. And we've actually done so on our show a couple times already, where we bring local people through that, you know, don't have an experience or are looking for one or have something to add for expertise. And if you can get a hit and you can not convince but allow the evidence to speak for itself, that's the most compelling argument you'll ever have with a skeptic, is let them discover it on their own. Just give them the tools to empower themselves to do it.
Well, I will put you in touch because both of them are looking for a place. And I'll tell you what, you know who else is looking for a place is comedian Bill Engvall.
Really?
I did a podcast with him a few months back, and he wants to go to a haunted place so bad and have a real experience. And I think it'd be funny to say, well, we're going to take you to a haunted rec center.
Absolutely right, because that's what happened. That's the same type of mentality that happened to us, is like you have that moment where you're just like, okay, you know.
Why do you believe it's so haunted then? I mean, you know, if it's not this dark, twisted history to it.
I
think it's because it's a community center. So many people have been in and out of there for so long for so many different reasons. Kids, adults, for, you know.
That's absolutely right. It's close to 100 years old at this point. It is.
People lived in the apartments. People played sports, did dance, did, you know, any kind of rec.
What we were told was that the nearby mill, this was a place to make sure that the mill workers wouldn't go out and entertain themselves. It was kind of like a method of control. So you'd have someone work ungodly hours in the mill, and then, you know, if they wanted to blow off some steam, right nearby is this recreation center, so they can go there and, you know, enjoy themselves and then go home.
Right.
Some of the people, their home was the recreation center because it's an attached apartment complex, which is just a story in itself.
Yeah, it's very weird.
And so, like Carol said, you know, as close to a century of people coming through and filling it, not, you know, with negativity, but just great energy, having experiences there, leaving memories there, it leaves you with residual haunts. Some people have passed away there.
Yes.
You know, there's intelligent hauntings. And then for whatever reason, there's the other category where there's things that we can't really understand are also there, and it all kinds of folds together into this bizarre cake of paranormal activity.
Yeah,
now that you've opened that Pandora's box, though, that people realize how active it is it weirding people out from wanting to come hang out there?
It's funny you say that, because it's a slippery slope to walk when you do a public place like that, especially in a small town. So that's something that we had to be very cognizant of. And so we wanted to go in with the mentality of we're going to catch whatever is happening here. In our show, one of the things that we promised each other at the very beginning was that we're not going to sensationalize anything. We don't have any intent or desire to do anything like that. So what we've passed on in this place to our viewers is exactly what happened to us that night. And though it may be chilling for some people who aren't okay with the paranormal, this is their community center. It's been a part of their community, and they were the ones that approached us. So knowing it's a small town, small community, these ghost stories are new to us. It's commonplace for them. So I think if anything, it freaked out us out more than it's ever done for anyone in town. They kind of embrace it, which is a really unique, yeah, really awesome thing to see.
Do you notice that activity there is more hyped up after there's been basketball games there or a dance or bingo that night? Is there one thing in particular that really amps the joint up?
Absolutely. It's their activity. We've gone, I think, twice now for the show.
There's a lot of kids in there. There's a lot of kids rooms. Is it just like after school rec?
They've got after school rec and adult programs. It's always moving until we get in there.
Whole area for gymnastics.
And so it's interesting because we were told, you know, that it spikes throughout the afternoon as there's more people there. And it seems when we start investigating, it seems like we got about a 3-hour window before it calms down.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've learned that when we go in there and, through the multiple times that we've gone, not on the show, that you film your interviews, anything B-roll right up front, because when it's time to film, you've got to go do it fast to start communicating with the things that are there. And then, when it calms down, it's usually a nice, you know, time to go home. It's never left us wanting more, if that mm-hmm. makes sense, besides the fact that it's incredible.
That fascinates me more than anything, right? The idea that a place that has no, you know, like you said, there's going to be death here and there. There's this, but it's nothing that would lead you to believe this is going to be a location that's a hotbed of activity. With that said, have you stumbled upon, you know, what is now a 7-Eleven and turns out to be the footprint of what was once the biggest lunatic asylum where, you know, 8 men were beheaded with a rusty machete or something, and then you realize what's going on?
Well, not like that extreme, but there's definitely one that surprised me before Ty and I were with Haunt Me. We went to this nail salon.
Oh, my God.
The nail salon, how can you describe how big it was?
It's like
how small it is.
So this nail salon is like the size of, you know, a glorified kiosk in the mall, I think.
It,
you know,
like, serviced cars or police cars or something. Like, you could drive
it was like a garage.
A vehicle in it, and that's it. They had a few chairs upstairs to do nails, and they had a few chairs downstairs to do your feet. So we were upstairs, and we had our K2 meter, and we saw that the microwave was giving off, like, oh, my God, so much. And we're like, okay, this is why people are getting headaches and, you know,
yeah,
weird things.
Yeah, we've debunked this. You
really?
Know?
I mean, we were being
ignorant.
We've
debunked the nail salon. Let's go home.
Yeah, this is too small to be here. So we were just, like, kind of playing it out, whatever. And then a couple hours later, we're all sitting in the dark downstairs, and a few of the investigators were sitting in the chairs and at where your feet would be, but a couple feet in front of you where the nail tech would be, is a small trash can to put, like, cotton balls in and stuff. Ty and I were sitting Indian style on the floor right in front of it. The lid came off that trash can about 3 feet in the air, as smooth as possible, and shot about 4 feet to the side. I used the heels of our feet to shoot back on our asses halfway across. We were like, what the hell? And
it was like a cannon went off inside of the trash can and just pooped it across.
Yeah, but
the
it was so silent and smooth. It's like, you know, an unseen person picked it up and chucked it. And then within a second, we were like, okay, this is why we're here. We crawled right over. We were looking for strings. We were like, who did this? Blah, blah, blah. No one touched it. We were watching it the whole time. There was no strings. Nobody did it. It was It was insane.
So yeah, it's not it's not the level of like Machete Bandit in a 7-Eleven, which is now a hotel that's haunted.
But we for sure underestimated it.
And that is something that's super dangerous about doing what we do. If you were to go in without research, we have a story about that. If we want to jump into that, Carol, the mill in Sanford. Do you have time for a why you should always do your research story?
No, we don't like important information. Just hit me with the glossy, scary stuff. Yeah, of course we do. I do want to throw you guys one tip. This will sound strange. Reach out to some of the chiropractors in town in different parts of Maine. I have spoken to, I think, about a dozen chiropractors who just open up to me when they find out what I do in the radio show. And a dozen that I've met have all told me they have activity in their office.
That's oddly specific.
Right. And I said, well why do you think that is? And what was interesting to me was he said, we're shifting and manipulating and we're changing energies and we might be maybe releasing. And I said, you realize what you're saying to me. You believe you're releasing spirit energy. And they've all kind of shrugged and they said, I don't have any other explanation for what's going on.
Something, I mean, all I could think of was like the realigning of the chakras. And then you said that shifting thing and it's got to be something along the lines of that.
Right. Yeah, you would think it's bizarre. But talk to some chiropractors. You may find, we had one here in Minnesota by me. The guy went out of business because he was just old and retired from it. But he said that he would have to come in all the time because the motion sensor alarms, which he replaced twice, would trip in the middle of the night. Mm. The video cameras would shut themselves off, and then they'd turn back on, and the room would be a wreck. And they would have water turning. He'd be cracking somebody's back, and all of a sudden the water would turn on. And it was the spigots that you have to turn them on, and they'd just go on full blast. He'd have to stop cracking and go turn the water back off. And this was in multiple places.
You're giving the back realignment to that girl from The Exorcist.
What if they were, like, realigning, and they did shift energy, and all kinds of negative energy is shifting out of these people? Doesn't enough negative energy create, conjure in poltergeist?
Yeah, I mean, it could be poltergeist activity, especially if, someone from a scientific field is doing something like this and not clearing out the area. I mean, I'm just spitballing.
Right,
like,
me too.
If you release enough, if you dirty your house up enough and you don't own a vacuum, it's going to become unlivable. I mean, so maybe they just needed to partner up with someone in the spiritual. They need a Katie is what it is. this is fascinating to me. I'm going to probably put Katie in touch with some chiropractors to see if she can get some side business to clean out their offices from a metaphysical level.
I interrupted you. Let's go back into some of the other places that you wanted to tell me about and why you should do your due diligence when it comes to retrieving history.
So this was, I think, a lesson on purpose given to us from the universe, because this is the first time ever out of four seasons that we did not scout out an area.
And I think it was because the universe thing is on track, because I think we were getting a little bravado and, we didn't need to drive all this way. It's always been fine.
No, always stick to what you're doing and always scout out the area, because when we got there...
Let me just backtrack. Hold on one second. Yep. The reason why we really did it, too, is because we wanted to go into a place without Ash's historical stories that, regardless of how hard you try, it's going to cause bias. Like if you hear a story of a dead little girl who fell down a well, you're going to be looking for a girl who fell down the well, right? Even no matter what, it's just going to be in there. And so we knew from our fans had reached out to us and said, this mill is incredibly active. You need to go. You have to go. And we ignored them for about 2 years, but so many came through that we were like, let's just go check this out.
Right.
But let's make a twist of it, and let's not do anything besides historical research. Let's research none of the claims. And that's how we started this.
We show up, and the guy was just giving us one-word answers. Basically, Ty and I started to eyeball each other, and we're like, where can we go? And his answers were, I don't care.
Anywhere. Well, what areas of this building are off limits to us as a web series?
Oh,
nothing you can't find.
My bedroom, but you won't be able to find it. And this is like a warehouse that if anybody lights any kind of spark, it's going to go up quick. It looked like a chop shop. I'm sorry. It was like the biggest yard sale I've ever seen.
It was full of crap. Like, to be
bluntly honest.
I was going to say step around and be polite.
Oh, so bad.
Polite, honesty, bluntness. I like it all.
Well,
it's a shithole.
Yeah, there was a place, a room that was entirely filled of toilets, but we were also told that there was no bathroom on site. So it was like, you know, it's just this person or whatever business it was, unbeknownst to us, was a collector of junk.
And there were shady people to begin with around, and I really mean that when I say that. I mean, some of these people, I think, might have lived in there. Anyways, he said, you'll be the only ones in here, yada, yada.
And we sealed ourselves in at sunset.
Yeah, only one way in and out, and it was a garage door that when it came down, it locked.
And so we're walking, we start our investigation, we're walking around, we're in two different groups.
Wait a minute. First, when we first started walking, this seemed small, but ended up, I realized, being a bigger thing in the end. Katie and I heard something when we first started off, and we walked over this area. There were these makeshift walls that were about as tall as us, and it made like a little cubicle area. And we walked in there, and the noise happened like right next to our legs. And we'll go a little further and end up telling you what it ended up being.
So we're walking around it. Carol and I are in the first team, and Katie and Ash are in the catacombs underneath team. One of the things that I love to try to do, because it never happens, is the knocks. You know, finish the knock where you go dot 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 dot, and then you wait for the rest of it. Right, it's standard procedure.
We also saw right. that.
And so I did it. You know, and for one of the first times ever, you know, we did the dot 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 dot, and we got a boop boop. You know, from way on the distance. So me and Carol are celebrating. We're like, oh my god, this is great. We're walking around, we're hearing footsteps in there too, so like disembodied footsteps. It was actually more evidence than I thought. Like, we even had K-tube lips and an EMF detector go off.
Yeah.
But it was crazy cool. And so we swapped, so the girls are now upstairs. We're about 3 hours into the operation.
Yeah.
Carol and I are downstairs in the basement. We found all these brooms, and so we're sitting against poles, so maybe if something comes by in the night, on camera, it could knock over a broom, because we've had that happen in an episode before.
We even said, this is here, if you can move this. We're using this object to almost communicate. Can you please move this around? Whatever.
So we're in full ghost hunt mode when we're downstairs and we hear above us, boom, 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 boom. And so we're like, what is that? It was a broom. It was
one
of the brooms.
It's got to be the broom.
So we're running around in the basement from pillar to pillar to try to find these brooms, and they're all standing upright. And then it comes down to the point where it has just been maybe less than a minute. We hear footsteps on the stairs leading upstairs, so we come running to see who it is.
It's our producer with a curtain rod. He's like, guys, we got a problem.
Katie and Ash come downstairs after him. Katie's holding a cast iron pot, and Ash is holding a shovel. And she comes through, and we're like, what was it? You know, that was crazy activity.
Yeah, they got weapons.
And all Katie says is, we have to leave. We're like, what do you mean? Like, did you guys hear that too? And Ash goes, yep, we heard it too. There's a man upstairs.
There's been a man in here the whole time.
The whole time.
So that noise that Katie and I heard, he was crouching down probably right next to our legs.
All the knocks, all the footsteps, he was in the dark. And so
he reached out and grabbed Katie or I? I mean, so me and Ty each grabbed a big wrench. And we started to pack up with our camera guy. And as we're doing this, the man that was upstairs appears at the top of the stairs that, you know, we're at the bottom of. We can only see from his waist down. He's got sweatpants on. And he starts mumbling to us about the alarm, and we can barely understand what he's saying, and then he just walks off. We see the legs walk off.
We're trying to, like, get across to him, you know, we're filming a show, you're not supposed to be here, and he wanders away again into the dark.
And we have to go up these stairs and walk still out.
Because there's only one way in, one way out, and so we're walking through the darkness. We're calling out to this guy to try to figure out where he is, because we're done. The location is, you know, It's compromised. It's unsafe at this point. Our experiment failed or succeeded, you know, depending on how you want to look by it. Like, always do your research, always scout.
Teaching tool.
And so we're walking by there. The crew is in the middle of our group carrying all the equipment in one pass because we can't go back into this building.
This guy turns the friggin' lights on, reverse lights on the top window of the back of a pickup truck.
That had been, like, partially destroyed and left in this warehouse. And the lights just follow us as we're walking out. And Carol, in true Italian fashion, standing there as we walk out, he goes, "Yo, dude! You don't know us. I don't know you. Let's keep it that way. Wherever you are, stay right the F there, man." And so she's screaming at them as we're walking across.
Well, what triggered me is looking back at my team and just how they felt. And I know that a few of them were nervous. A few of them were pissed.
A few of us.
Pissed off. I just lost it.
What triggered you was there was a crazy person hiding in the dark, and we only had one way out of this place. That's what triggered you. So that's our PSA, and we actually made an episode about it, where you know, we hide the fact that, you know, there was someone in there with us until we find out on camera, so that our viewers can watch along with us, get all that activity along with us, and then learn, always do your homework first. And that's one of our episodes this season.
And was that episode sponsored by Depends?
It should have been. I was ready to use it.
Wow, that is freaky. Yeah, I've heard many horror stories of that, unfortunately, where people are investigating and only come to find later that it was the living there that was doing this, and just how creepy that aspect of it can be. And then some of these places, they find bodies, right? That's very freaky.
Yeah, I know how to deal with spirits. I don't know how to deal with people hiding in the dark, ready to grab Carol's ankles.
No, seriously, when I realized, I put two and two together, I'm like, holy shit, he was in that little cubicle area with me and Katie, and he was
3 feet away from
you? Right, from our legs. He had to have been crouching down. We followed the noise into there.
So that was quite a night for us. Definitely something that I carry with me moving forward.
Yeah, I would hope so. That's an important lesson to deal with. Let's hear about some of your other favorite haunts. I know time is getting away from us here. Let me hear about a couple of the more let's go creepy for our last couple of stories here. What are some of the most frightening paranormal encounters? That was a terrifying human encounter, unfortunately. But let's talk about some more of the freaky paranormal aspects of the show and things that you found.
Yeah, so let's drop back into what Maine's all about. You know, it's the lore, it's the, you know, fisherman tales of ghosts along the coast. And I don't think there's anyone better story-wise than a place called Seguin Island off the coast of Maine.
Mm-hmm.
The odds of us getting there were low, but I wanted to make it happen anyway, and they were receptive enough to host us for the night. But this place is an active lighthouse that's still used. It has been used since the early 1800s, and it has one of the only remaining Fresnel lenses in it. That's how old this place is.
It was gorgeous, that big light.
And so it's off the coast of Maine by about 2 miles. The legend that attracted us was that in the late 1800s, there was a lightkeeper was out there, and he didn't want to winter alone, so he brought his wife. But knowing that when you're out on Seguin, the ice dams come in by about December and cut you off from the mainland until April or so. So there's about 4 months of solitude that you cannot traverse back and forth to the island.
It reminds me of The Shining.
You're stuck out there. So wanting to be out there with his wife for the winter, but also wanting to make sure that she was well entertained, he bought her a piano, which came with one piece of sheet music, as the legend goes.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, she didn't know how to play the piano, but could read music, so she taught herself that song and played that song over and over and over and over again, to the point where apparently the lighthouse keeper grabbed an axe and took it to the piano. She destroyed the piano, and when she protested, he took the axe to her.
Ooh.
When he kind of came out of it and realized that he had killed his wife, he climbed to the top of the lighthouse and threw himself off of it. It wasn't until the light burnt out that anyone on the mainland knew what had happened, and then still couldn't get to them until the ice was passable. And so that the legend is that the ghost of
it sounds woman, like The Shining. You just explained.
That, yeah, that's what Carol said.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me just like The Shining.
And so the legend is that the ghost of the woman and the axe murderer is still there. But this loving sea legends, because they're always richer and more like steeped in superstition, is that boats don't pass too close to the island on foggy nights because you can hear the sound of a piano playing through over the bay. So great story, right? Like had to go insert ourselves into this.
Yeah.
Right.
And so doing that meant that we were going to be taking a ferry out 2 miles into the ocean. And then they don't travel at night. So they were going to strand us there until the next morning. And so with no way to get back to the mainland, it was the first time that we'd ever been truly trapped at a location, because you always have that ability that if anything gets too intense, you can call out for, help, or you can just leave. And so this time we are trapped on the deserted island, with the ghost of an axe murderer. And I thought it would just be a cool story and a cool adventure, but it didn't disappoint. It was like, again, when moving from The Shining straight up to any Stephen King novel, the fog rolled in around sunset.
Enveloped us.
It came off the sea. It cut us off so that we couldn't see the mainland anymore. The fog horn is now going off every 30 seconds. The lighthouse, you know, is pivoting, and that's all you can see is it's shining through the dark. And we're doing this investigation, and it was one of the first times that I'd ever had this happen to me, but I was playing around. Probably shouldn't have been disrespecting the area that I was in, but I was wearing kind of like a military jacket, and I decided I wanted to dress up like a lighthouse keeper. So we were in like the museum, and I grabbed one of the keeper hats, and I was wearing it around. And when I took it off, I was up looking at another museum exhibit when I felt something adjust my collar, and then pat my shoulders down. And I just stood there frozen. And on camera, you can see like the back of my jacket pop a little bit, like it moves, which is insane to me. But what I realized like long after, like coming out of the shock of that happening, like having Carol probably calm me down, was the fact that like, you know, I was wearing a junior lighthouse keeper hat, and to a spirit who had been there, I kind of looked disheveled. You know, I wasn't wearing official gear. And so someone just brushed me out a little bit and then passed along. And that was the start of the night. From then on out, like, we were hearing disembodied voices.
I swear Ashley and I heard small voice singing when we were in the lighthouse.
In the lighthouse. And yeah. Then Carol had an incident where, for whatever reason, she couldn't breathe of the most haunted rooms.
I could not catch my breath, and I had a hard time swallowing.
Which, you know, if you are at, you know, a community center, there's a first aid kit, and there's a hospital down the road, and, you know, you can get care. But when you have your friend / teammate, you know, having a hard time breathing, and you're 2 miles out on an island with really no way to get back, you know, it just elevated everything that night. There was an element of, you know, paranormal, and then there was an element of seclusion and an element of danger. And so in that episode, you know, all the evidence that we got scared us, but the seclusion scared us even more. It was definitely our biggest adventure yet.
And what is the what was the episode title on that one?
Carol, do you remember the name of that one? It's the season finale of season 3, but I'm not sure exactly the title of it. Oh, The Hermit, duh. Yeah, it was The Hermit.
And I remember Katie pulled The Hermit card.
Yeah, during it. And the other thing, again, if you want to go back to the beginning of the show, when you're talking about the relevancy of the cards Katie picks and how we know that they're on cue, is she did 2 tarot card readings that night, shuffled up the cards as you do each time, and pulled The Hermit card both readings and pulled The Lovers both readings. So again, The Hermit card is the location. The Lovers ties back to the legend that we'd already heard. That alone was incredible. And then like moving along with the actual physical evidence that we got was the coolest adventure ever, man. It was crazy. It was straight up Scooby-Doo.
That is really cool. But when you go in and you start, you know, kind of exploring that, and you know, you talked about the one case where you went in with very little knowledge. I'm always one that sometimes I prefer no front loading. I don't want to know what to expect, so right. that I'm not getting preconceived notions and maybe, you know, filing away an EVP or hearing something and saying, oh, of course I would hear the sound of a gunshot in this room because this is where the assassination took place.
That's exactly right.
Right.
That's why we did Stanford the way we did. But the interesting thing with the island is that going in and knowing the legends didn't seem to affect the activity that happened there. Yes, we were more astute looking for it, mm-hmm. But you know, there's no way out of, I don't know how many cards are in a tarot card deck, but to have Katie draw the two most relevant cards to our situation twice,
right?
You know, that's at least at bare minimum, right. That's intriguing.
Now, when you do a place like that and you've got that kind of activity, that kind of stuff, how many of these episodes do you go in and film and it's flat dead, nothing happens? And then do you scrap those episodes and just keep looking for ones that have more appeal to them?
No, we've never scrapped an episode. And that's not for lack of activity happening. For some reason, one of our viewer favorite episodes is from the first season when all we got was like one K2 blip, which could have been anything. But the show is more so less about, like, from a ghost hunter stance of trying to show like the most extreme evidence that, you know, like the best haunts in the world. We always make sure that we go in and we tell the story of a place, tell its history, and then share our experiences there. And if it was haunted and if we caught evidence, that's the bonus for our viewers. Mm-hmm. Haunt Me is more about connecting history with the present and our own experiences during the night that we are in a certain location. It's our story about the time we were able to spend in a place that most people wouldn't see. So anytime that we go into a place and nothing happens, you know, like that is then an allegory to how, you know, maybe next time we should adjust our methods of investigating. Mm-hmm. If we go into a place and nothing happens, maybe that's, you know, a more of a place where we lean more heavily on the history of it. So this wonderful history of a location that may or may not be haunted is what actually gets through. And then if we go into a place that is like the GRCC, the community center, which is off the chains, obviously we're going to show that too. But that's really why in season one, before we even started, we decided to come up with a rating system. So that other people and viewers, you know, people mm-hmm. going in as paranormal investigators or viewers watching it, can then rank the places that we visit against each other. So that, you know, there'll never be a zero. And if you watch the finale, you'll see our first ever 10. We rank everything from a scale of 1 to 10. But we do something a little bit different, and we go in and we make sure we pre-rate it. It's always pre-rated based on the claims of the people who are there, matched with the history and the legends attached to it, because we had the foresight, thank God, in season one to realize that we're only ever going to spend one night in a place. And so for us to say, yes, this is definitely haunted, or no, this can't be haunted, after spending one night there in a place that's 150 years old just isn't fair. Mm-hmm. So with this rating system that we average a pre-rate of the history and the questions, or the history and the owner experiences with our own, then we rate our own experiences that we spent there one night, average them together, and that's the total Haunt Me rating. And that's kind of like what our show envelops itself into, is, you know, almost like a public service announcement. If you're going to the Greater Renford Community Center, expect a 7 out of 10 for activity based on the history and Haunt Me's investigation there.
Very cool. So you're kind of the travel advisor for paranormal locations.
Yeah, you could look at that. That's definitely, yeah, I guess we provide that service. We throw out bulletins of what to expect for anyone who wants to go behind us.
All right, last few minutes together. Carol, one of your very favorite freaky stories from filming.
Oh, my God.
I know, pressure, huh?
Ty.
You want me to help you with your favorite
yes.
story? Oh, my God.
I don't know. I haven't been like totally freaked out. I'd have to say it was probably the GRCC Community Center, because when that act, okay, so it was active when we first went, but different things keep happening when we go back. And when we were doing EVP sessions, and we actually asked, you know, can you give us a knock? And we got three knocks, and it went on one wall, then the next wall, and then the wall behind me. And it's just like, okay, I'm surrounded.
Yeah, so it was less so of, like, giving us the evidence we were asking for, and
right.
more so of a threat of, like, we got you.
Oh, and then and from there on out, even – I know he talked about the interviews, but just during – what is it, the DR60? When we
the live sessions.
Yeah, when we do the live EVP sessions, it was – the pounding and knocking and footsteps were so constant, sometimes two different sets of footsteps at a time, that we had to just be like – we had to ask again, can you please just stop so we can hear the EVP, if there is any, when we play it back? It was so crazy. It was just constant.
And I think what I'll do is I'll tease out, that's going to be a season 5 episode that'll come out.
Yeah, so I had to skirt around what I said, but it's just...
I'm not skirting. I'm going to tell him. I think the reason why it might have been elevated that night is because on season 4, you'll see that we meet up with some great group of people, Greg and Dana Newkirk, who collect and study haunted objects. And we had a haunted object that we needed them to advise us about in season 4. It became so out of hand that we actually convinced the owner of it to give it to them for further study. And they came back to Maine, to drop it off in May, and we decided to do the exchange at this community center. So we filmed another episode there. But the caveat with the Newkirks is that, again, with them, being purveyors of all objects that are haunted, they brought some of their collection with them. And so we already are in the most active location that we've ever been in. And then we were in there with their collection of haunted objects. And at one point during the night, we decided to do a little bit of psychometry and choose our partners for the rest of the night when we do solitary. And by partner, I meant find the object that's resonating with you. And so we have... all of these terrifying things that, you know, some on the scale of misunderstood all the way up to want you dead, sitting on a table, and we're picking one after another, and this building is, you know, going off the chains, and the objects are doing things.
That was very unnerving. When they brought the objects in, it was unnerving.
And so that'll be an episode coming up next year that, as scary as things get, I think that was probably the most intense that we've ever been through, because there's so many different elements all, you know, melding together in this paranormal hotspot.
Is there a location that you've tried to get into repeatedly that just will not have you?
I feel like there is.
In Maine? Yeah, there's this place. I'll leave the name off so I don't publicly shame them, but they know who they are. You know who you are. There's this place that nearby where I went to college that when I was in school, I had a little periodical called Weird UNE. I went to the University of New England, where I'd travel around and I'd just write little blog posts about strange stories that I liked. And, you know, it was just like a pastime for the school newspaper. But I was allowed in this really cool theater that has a ghost story that's amazing. It's there's an opera singer at this theater from the late 1800s, I think 1890s, where she was a traveling opera singer, and she came out and sang this song called, I think it was Goodbye Little Lottie Goodbye. Her daughter was in the audience that night, and the legend goes that the people who were at the show that night thought that she was singing directly to her daughter for some reason. She finished after her encore of the song, walked off stage, and died. Straight up, she just collapsed and died. And that was, you know, the last thing that her daughter ever saw was her mom singing goodbye to her. This theater, for whatever reason, kind of like owned that story. And there's like a memorial to her and a picture up on the wall. But the theater has been just sidelined so frequently with requests to go. They've kind of shut it down to all things paranormal, and they kind of celebrate that spirit, in their own way, and they're happy with that. So understandably, they don't, you know, want groups in, because it's such a good quality, positive story that this ghost of the the opera singer is still there cheering on people doing performances. They just want to honor her spirit and not bother her, which I think in a way is sweet.
It
but
is.
I would love for anything to, you know, bring the team back in there since, you know, I went in on my own.
Right.
You know, 7 or 8 years
we'll
ago.
We'll be super respectful.
Exactly. So
like, we'll even be very quiet. We'll just leave right after.
But yeah, so that's one place that I would love to go, but I totally understand why they want to respect their spirit, and I honor that for them.
All right, very cool. Guys, I wish you a lot of success and luck with the series. It's a lot of fun. We'll have links up to the Facebook page and to the website so people can find Haunt Me. And how often do the new episodes come out?
When we're in season, which we just wrapped for our finale last week, we release an episode every 2 weeks, usually from May to late August or September. And then on the off weeks, there are always Thai Tuesdays, which are, you know, they started with getting people, allowing them the chance to see behind the scenes and see the cast when we're not on. And they've kind of just turned into periodic torture segments that people can watch and enjoy. So so that's fun for people out there, too. So, yeah, enjoy all of that. We are going to be doing live streams and commentary all winter during our off season while we're still filming. So hopefully there's still good content coming you guys' way when we're not showing new episodes. But I think from what we've already done for season 5, it's gonna be
it's been fun.
So I already can't wait to show these. So
well, I'll tell you what, once season 5 is on, why don't we get your other cohorts in on an episode and we'll revisit and talk about some of the highlights for them and for you from the new season. And everybody else listening, check it out. Haunt Me. You're always looking for something fun to do till the next episode of Beyond the Darkness. Now you've got a web series to keep up with as well. And do me a favor, folks. Make sure if you have not updated it and gotten it, get yourself the new Podcast One app. You may need to get rid of the old one and download the new one. It makes it so much easier. There is communities there. There's ways to communicate with other listeners. You get great access, 360-degree videos that they've posted, and more. So check it out in the Google Play Store and the iTunes Store. You can get the Podcast One app. We're really excited about all the changes and how easy it is to work now. And remember, if you ever are using any one of the apps to listen to the show and you're having any problems with staggering or issues, first bet is always go in and update that program, that app, because a lot of times it just may need an update and an upgrade. So please check that out. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow, the inhuman haunting of Malvern Manor here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.